Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Thank you, Brian Main, for that introduction, and welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. Looking at Mormon history can be a very fascinating read, and we have spent many broadcasts talking about a book called Mormon Enigma, Emma Hale Smith, written by two Mormon authors. The reason why we like to quote from books that are written by Mormon authors is because Mormons have a tendency to trust what is said in these books, more so than books written about Mormonism by outsiders. And certainly we cannot properly assume that the two authors of this book, Linda King Newell and Valene Tippetts Avery, had any sort of axe to grind against the Mormon Church and would be purposely trying to include information meant to embarrass the Mormon Church. As far as we know, they were both faithful Latter-day Saints. So we're looking at this book, giving you an idea of what early Mormon history was like, primarily focusing on how Emma Hale Smith, the wife of Joseph Smith, faced a lot of these trials and tribulations of the early years. And as we mentioned, many of the trials and tribulations that she faced were the result of her husband's words and behaviors. We're getting into a part of Mormon history now where they've left Kirtland, Ohio, and they are now residing in Missouri. And Missouri does not offer the Mormons a place of comfort. There was a lot of persecution that took place during the Missouri period. It was certainly not right. But as we've mentioned in the past, many times Mormons have this idea that there was nothing that the Mormons did to deserve this kind of behavior. And that's not always the case. We're now to a point in Mormon history where the Danites are starting to come into play. And this is right after Sidney Rigdon's famous Salt Sermon was preached, mainly as a warning to those who would dissent or would be dissenters against Mormonism. Sidney Rigdon had a very low tolerance for dissenters. Sidney Rigdon, sadly, had a big mouth. He got the Mormons in a lot of trouble sometimes for the things that he said. But what's interesting about this is that many times when Sidney Rigdon would say stupid things, Joseph Smith would support it.
Well, not only that, we're going to talk a little more about the July 4th oration, but that whole sermon was printed up. If you hadn't printed it so that the enemies could have seen it, probably it would have just faded away. But that caused them all kinds of problems. And Sidney Rigdon was definitely a thorn for the Mormons when it came to trying to live peaceably with their non-Mormon neighbors.
He didn't really help matters at all.
Nope.
It would have been best if Sidney Rigdon had just learned how to curb his anger and maybe handle it in a different manner. Get a little bit of anger management classes or something. But he does say these things, and it causes the critics of Mormonism, which in this case are the Missourians who live in the area, to actually have evidence that proves their suspicions. The Mormons seem to give it to them on a silver platter. Oh, you have suspicions? Well, let us do this. And sure enough, they'll say, that's why we have our problems with you people. And again, as we mentioned, it's not just religious differences that are involved, but it's also political differences that also play into the mix. According to the book written by the two Mormon authors, it begins near the bottom of page 71 where it says, emboldened by Joseph's tolerance of such actions. And the actions, of course, in the proper context, are Mormons actually kicking other former Mormons out of the community. And it talks about how the families of these dissenters were actually kicked out into the streets and their belongings were strewn about by fellow Mormons. And of course, the question is raised, well, I thought the Mormons didn't like it when that happened to them. Why are they doing it to those that are among their own community who maybe now have had some doubts about following Joseph Smith at all?
Samson Everett and Jared Carter soon organized a secret society of male members. Called the Sons of Dan, they quickly shortened the name to Danites. They were bound together by oaths and secret signs and signals, and sworn to uphold the church and each other to the point of death. These men encouraged each other to a harsh militarism that would haunt the church for another 40 years. Where did they get these secret signs and signals?
It sounds very similar to what eventually would be a part of the temple endowment ceremony. Now,
sure.
Of course, at this point, they're not really even doing this in their temples. They didn't do that in Kirtland, as far as I know. This comes about later on, after Joseph Smith becomes a Mason in 1842. But what I find fascinating about this is the Danite movement. Emboldened by Joseph's tolerance of such actions, Samson Avard and Jared Carter soon organized a secret society of male members. The controversy arises over how much did Joseph Smith really condone when it came to this group known as the Danites. He may have allowed by his behavior the putting together of such a group, but we don't really know how much of their actions Joseph Smith really was behind, or at least condoned, I should say. So that becomes a little bit confusing. And there is controversy even among Mormon authors as to how far Smith was actually granting his blessing on such a movement. It sounds like he did in the beginning, sounds like he didn't later on. He was actually appalled by some of the things that they did. It's hard to tell.
Well, one of the men, I believe, was Orrin Porter Rockwell.
That ought to tell you something.
And then also, I think, wasn't Wild Bill Hickman part of that as well?
Well, you mentioned Rockwell. People listening to this broadcast who don't live in our neck of the woods, if you go down into Draper, look at how many things are commemorated towards the memory of Orrin Porter Rockwell.
They even have a street, I think, right?
We have a street named after him. There's a trail named after him. His face is actually emboldened on the on-ramp going from 123rd South, going south on I-15. You will see Orrin Porter Rockwell's face emboldened on the on-ramp there.
This is a guy who killed 17 people for the church. He's the guy that wounds Governor Boggs on orders from Joseph Smith.
Well, he denied that, though. He denied that.
But there's good evidence
that it was.
Because
he said, if it was me, he would have killed him. Okay,
so there's your revenge,
yeah.
I guess.
So there's controversy on that also.
But I mean, that's what you're honoring when you're putting this guy all over the place. He's a murderer.
Yeah, it's very troubling, I would hope, for some Latter-day Saints when they see that connection. And Orrin Porter Rockwell was Joseph Smith's bodyguard. He'd later become the bodyguard of Brigham Young. And had he lived long enough, he probably would have been found guilty for the murder. I think it was the Aikens party. You bring this up, and I'm not prepared to talk about that, but I think it was the Aikens party that he was eventually going to be tried
but
for.
But let's just say that the Danites were not saints. These were not people who you would want
to... Well, they were saints.
They were Latter-day Saints, but they weren't saints in the sense of
no.
They were nice people. They would have done whatever they had to protect Joseph Smith and the Mormon Church.
And of course, looking at it through their lens, they're defending themselves. And that's one of the things that Sidney Rigdon is going to say in this controversial speech he gives a few weeks later after his salt sermon. And that's known as the July 4th Oration.
But even the ladies who wrote this book said at the end of that paragraph, these men encouraged each other to a harsh militarism that would haunt the church for another 40 years. Now, I don't know why they stopped at 40 years, but this is something that I don't think they're approving of.
Right. Well, the thing is there is a lot of this very harsh feelings going on between both of the groups. And some of the historians at least admit that the actions on the part of the Mormons didn't really help. And I would have to agree. It doesn't help. This is a very delicate situation. When it says, getting rid of some of the dissenters, and I'm reading again from Allen and Leonard, undoubtedly some dissenters were an embarrassment to the church, for they had been accused of theft, counterfeiting, and tampering with the mails. Again, accused of. But such a document, this is the document that was signed by the 80-plus Mormons, but such a document proved equally embarrassing. It now appeared that the Mormons were taking the law into their own hands, though the document was apparently signed spontaneously without the formal sanction of church leaders, except possibly Sidney Rigdon. Whatever its purpose, it quickly prompted the dissenters to leave. Such action by church members was unfortunate because their assumption of such power provided evidence against them that fed the anti-Mormon hostility again growing among their neighbor. neighbors. So here these two authors, James B. Allen and Glenn Leonard, are admitting that that kind of an action on the part of those who were dissenting was not a positive thing for their own image. It was a public relations nightmare, and certainly it proves to be. And this is, again, when the Salt Sermon comes about, that causes the Danites to be formed. And again, how much did Joseph Smith condone? I don't know. I really don't know. There's a lot of controversy even among some historians when it comes to that. But the fact remains is that the tensions are going to grow. Now we're moving into July, and we're getting to what has come to be known as the July 4th Oration. And again, Sidney Rigdon is going to speak. Why in the world is Joseph Smith allowing Sidney Rigdon to talk at all in public is beyond me. But you have to ask the question, why did he allow Rigdon to do this? Rigdon's already proved himself as a hothead. We already know that Rigdon says things that gets the saints in a lot of trouble. Now, sadly, Joseph Smith seems to go along with a lot of the things that Rigdon says, so maybe I'm wrong in being too critical on Rigdon, because it sounds like he's being encouraged by Joseph Smith himself. If that's the case, folks, then you have to lay part of the blame at the feet of Joseph Smith. He's the ultimate voice in this community. He's the prophet of the living God as they see him. So you have to at least give some credit to Joseph Smith for a lot of the troubles that they faced as a result of Sidney Rigdon's big mouth. I don't know how you can escape it, do you? I'm having a problem with this. I mean, I know the Mormons always want to try and lay the blame at the feet of someone else, but it's kind of difficult in this situation.
A spokesman is supposed to be saying what his leader tells him to do, like the White House press secretary is supposed to speak that way. And Sidney Rigdon, perhaps he was saying what Joseph really wanted him to say.
Makes you wonder. Well, tomorrow we're going to talk about that July 4th oration and some of the things that Rigdon had to say in it.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Viewpoint on Mormonism is a radio show dedicated to discussing the differences between Mormonism and Christianity in a loving, gentle format. Sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry, this show's goal is to look carefully at the Bible and determine whether or not the beliefs, as taught by the leaders of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, correspond to truth. Now, whether you're a Latter-day Saint or a Christian, you can contact us and even ask a question that we could answer in a future show. Here's how. Email us at contact@mrm.org. Again, that's contact@mrm.org. And if you're a Christian who would like to financially support this radio ministry, you can do that as well. Just go to our website, www.mrm.org, and go to the right top button called Donate. This ministry cannot exist without the financial support of our friends and listeners, and we are grateful to everyone who plays a vital role in what we do. Again, that's mrm.org. We're glad to be on the air and providing this information to you.